Hello and welcome to a new episode of From Beirut. As always, let me go ahead and welcome my guests. First of all, we have Mr. Redouane Rezat, political analyst, joining us today. Welcome, Mr. Rezat.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, viewers, over this last night was a very long night for many people. It was the first time in almost a week that the Israeli entity did continue its aggression on the southern suburbs of Beirut. I'm not sure if you guys can go ahead and see, but we still have a lot of smoke rising from the buildings that were targeted. The attack happened between 2 and 3 o'clock at night, which is not overnight, as many people said. It was more in the early hours of the morning. So those have become renewed. Also, we have the U.S. Special Envoy Amos Hochstein did not and will not be traveling to Beirut. Instead, he's going to be going back to Washington, according to reports. We also have the Lebanese Prime Minister Mikata changing his tone over the possibility of a ceasefire with the Israeli entity. In addition, let me go and move over a bit to the Israeli entity. We have Israeli positions in Khiem were pummeled by Hezbollah as their invasion did falter. Iran's response to Israel were surpassed expectations, according to the IRGC commander. And Russia, Iran to sign strategic partnership agreement on their defense. And last but not least, we have Sayyid Houthi saying that Hezbollah's resilience has shocked the Israeli entity. I'm going to go ahead and start off with my guest today with this hit. Mr. Redouane, we have around 11 to 12 different air raids that happened yesterday, as we mentioned, between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And of course, we do have reports of casualty. First of all, I do want to ask you, it's been almost a week since the southern suburbs specifically have been hit. Why now has this renewal of aggression started?
I think the first reason is due to the failures at the front, because they just want to relieve some of their stress, some of their failures towards their own society. They want to show the Israeli society that they are succeeding somewhere, and which is they don't achieve at the battlefront, which battles are taking many different points, different parts. They are trying severely or hard enough to invade or to obtain one of the villages at the borders of between Lebanon and Palestine, and so far they achieved nothing but failures and more casualties and among their infantry, and also more and more of the destroying of their tanks and vehicles, armed vehicles in the south. So that's why they are trying to revenge against what's so-called buildings in southern suburbs of Beirut, because they know, and I'm sure that they know, that this suburb is being evacuated. People left the area totally, so hardly you can see any family still there living in that part of Beirut. But they still attack, and as it happened last time, about between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, about 11 air raids took place in southern suburbs. And as you said, that we're still seeing smoke coming out of those buildings. And militarily, it's nothing at all. Meaningless the targeting of this part of the Beirut. But we are used to such an act by this brutal enemy, just destroying civilians parts or buildings coming down, or demolished by the air raids, using American ammunition and using American planes to attack such an area in Beirut. Militarily, as I said, it means nothing at all, and nothing that will change the situation at the front, at the battlefront in the southern Lebanon.
Well, Mr. Redouane, I do want to add, just for the viewers, that now actually we're hearing the Israeli drone overhead as usual. I do want to ask for your response, because as we know, the Israeli entity, whenever we do have casualties, specifically here in the southern suburbs, the Israeli entity says that we issued warnings. They were warned, so they should have evacuated. Could you just explain briefly to the viewers when specifically the timing of these warnings that they do issue, and what way they do issue them?
Well, before I want to comment on the air raid took place entire against the ambulances.
Yes.
and the civil defense.
Yes.
And that was not an area, that was not a living area, it was not a civilian area, it was just a gathering of ambulances there at the shore of Tyre, and they were out of nowhere with no warning, with for no reason whatsoever, they were attacked. And many casualties went down in that attack. But when they issue a warning at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, can they expect that everybody is just opening his phone to receive that warning and act to that warning? And at 2 or 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, where people can go in the middle of the night? So actually, they are trying to justify their brutal attack against the civilians in front of their allies. But in fact, it's kind of determination of killing more and more of the civilians in a way that they feel that they are pressuring the resistance or putting heavy pressures on the fighters in the south. So, but so far, this kind of act has, you know, failed totally, because nothing has changed in the situation where battle is taking place in the south.
Well, as you are mentioning the battle in the south and the will of the fighters, could you just elaborate a bit? The last few days we've been focusing on the southern village of Khiem. What has been going on there, and why is this location so strategic?
Khiem itself is a very strategic city, let's say, because if they obtain Khiem, then they will come closer to the Litani River, because it's not far from Khiem. It's about 3 or 4 kilometers, and then they can cross the Khiem area to Kafar Qila, which is they can control the crossroads there in that area, that they think that will open the road for them to go down from Wadi Hujair to the Litani River at that point.
Yeah.
But so far, what they have been surprised is about the tactical resistance using against their army, which is, you know, it was, you know, caused very heavy casualties for them. Many tanks were destroyed in yesterday's battle, especially in the Talat Hammamus, yeah, and the southern part of Khiem. Also, they were hit by 4 times by rocket shells, you know, from the resistance, and that was what caused lots of damages to their part, and also destroyed many tanks there. So far, they had couldn't be able even to cross to Khiem at all. So the Khiem, it's a big city, well you know, reserved, and the resistance there is well prepared, and that we have seen the same scene in 2006.
Exactly.
Khiem did not fall in the hands of the Israelis. Even they have succeeded in 2006 to reach Marjayoun, where they were welcomed by the Lebanese police there, and they were offered hot tea and rest there. So while the resistance were still continued to hit their tanks and kill their soldiers resisting, and did not affect the will or the capability of the resistance to cause more and more damages to the what's so called the Israeli army.
Well, I do want to bring in, as we mentioned at the beginning, what Houthi leader Sayed Abdel Malik al-Houthi did say. He said that the enemy attempted to modify its tactics used in the July 2006 aggression by using infiltration forces and a few armored vehicles, but failed, as he also stressed, and saying that the Hezbollah resistance actually surprised and shocked them. In what ways do you believe he's talking about? By the missiles or the capabilities?
No, according to every military analysis, the Israelis thought by the air raids took place along the borders, and especially along the villages, which lays along the borders, Lebanese borders, let's say from Shaba down to Labuna, and we are talking about 110 kilometers front,
yes.
It stretches along this area, and it was on daily bombard by or air raids, destroyed every single house in those villages, and it was heavily bombarded by the Israeli airplanes or jet fighters since September 27. Mm-hmm. So they expected that nobody would still be alive there or will to stay in that area after this heavy attacks.
Yes.
So that's why they sent some infantry inside the Lebanese to cross the borders, and they were shocked and were surprised that the resistance is still there waiting for them, dealing with the Israeli army. And there were, you know, in a month time, the Israeli army lost about 95 dead and 1,000 injured. And this is if the Israeli army continue this operation and losing that number every day with the Lebanese resistance, in 1 year time we might not see an Israeli army exist anymore. So the Israelis must deal with these numbers very seriously if they really want to reach a fair ceasefire, as Sayyid Naim or Sheikh Naim Qasim said yesterday.
Yes. Well, as we know, the Israeli entity has definitely escalated its air aggression and air raids, as you mentioned, on all parts of Lebanon. But in accordance to the ground invasion that you were mentioning, the attempted ground invasion, with all these deaths and injured, if Israel does not accomplish their ground invasion, what does this mean for the Israeli war on Lebanon?
Well, I think there will be the conclusion that they will achieve a defeat as they did in 2006.
Yes.
So the continuing of killing more civilians all over Lebanon,
yes.
from the now north to the south.
Exactly.
We are talking about the massacre of Aito, which is about 220 kilometers away from the borders.
Yes.
It's far in the north. And also the Hermel and Qusair also, which is about 230 kilometers away from the borders,
yeah.
Destroyed Baalbek, destroyed most of the villages, totally. We are talking about total destructions here. We are not talking about hitting a building there or a house there. No, it's a total destruction, kind of trying to revenge from the people, from the society, which is, you know, supports the resistance and supports the fighters, and because they know and they understand that most of the fighters descend from those villages,
yes.
and they are trying to hit their families, let's say, or their relatives in that area. But that has no reflect and nothing at all on the fighters at the front, as I said, because the fighters are fully attentioned and fully aware that the Israelis are trying to hit them at the back, which is, and they're not willing to show any weaknesses there, and keep on concentrating, dealing with the invasion, and causing as many casualties as they can, in order to let this army understand that nothing at all can be taken by force from our resistance and from our country.
Well, I like that you emphasize on the point that they've hit all over Lebanon. And just for our viewers who perhaps do not have the information about why we emphasize on this, as we know, just to remind our viewers, these refugees have traveled to these specific areas because they have never been targeted before. So could you just briefly elaborate for our viewers why it's a surprise to us that these specific locations are being hit?
For two reasons. First, they want to create an internal conflict among the Lebanese people,
yes.
because those, let's say, Maisra is based in Kisirwan, Aito is in Zgharta, mm-hmm. which is a major Maronite society there, and they've had many other places in other area where mainly it's a Christian part.
Exactly.
So in order to turn this society against these those refugees, so they would have, as they expect, that the refugees will have no more places to go, and at least that making the Christians who support the resistance also to think again. So hosting any kind of civilians who comes from a Shiite part of Lebanon, that they will not be welcomed and they will not be able to stay or to rent even a house or to stay in the area, because they, the Israelis think by targeting those people that the Christians or the society there will be afraid that to bear consequences from that act.
Exactly. Well, thank you for that. I do want to move over a bit to the politics, what's going on right now in Lebanon. As we know, a U.S. official has told the Israel of Time, the Times of Israel, that Hochstein and McGurk's meetings with top Israeli officials on Gaza and Lebanon were very constructive and focused on a number of issues in depth, including Iran, Lebanon, and Gaza. Unfortunately, as we saw here at the beginning of the lead-in today, that Hochstein is not coming to Lebanon. So if everything was indeed very constructive, as they mentioned in the Israeli media, where's Hochstein?
First of all, Amos Hochstein.
Yes.
Just to correct the name.
Yes.
That's because under this name he served in the reserve Israeli army.
Yes.
And as we know, and the audience must know, that he came to Lebanon on an Israeli tank in 1982 as an Israeli armed officer. So he invaded our country on the tank. Now his plan by his government, America or Israel, think that he can invade the country by politics. Mm-hmm. So as he failed in 1982, he will fail now, because how can we believe that he is an honest, let's say, delegate to the American, representing the American government or the President Biden, and coming here to impose some terms, which is, you know, humiliating terms to be imposed on our country. And unfortunately, some of the Lebanese politicians believes him, and which is, the resistance does not believe, of course, the leader of the resistance, especially Hezbollah, does not believe that. Most of the honest politicians and patriotic politicians does not believe that. So we don't believe at all that Hochstein is a fair dealer between both sides to solve the conflict. All the terms and the conflict, if it wants to be solved by him, that will be in the favor of the Israelis. So he came to Israel, I believe, which is not shown on the media, to give more support and give more time to the Israeli government to continue their aggression against the country, and trying to push them and force them to achieve something that he can give him, just something in his hand. Yes. to negotiate on. Because how can he impose in politics what he couldn't achieve in military or in the battle? So he cannot. If you want to impose your terms on politics on the country, you must have shown something in the battlefield.
Yes.
Which is totally the opposite. So you cannot impose that. And even the Lebanese government, who shows lots of optimism on achieving a ceasefire, they cannot accept what Amos Hochstein wanted to achieve for the Israelis. So they couldn't, because they will be very embarrassed, and that will be very humiliating to them even. And so he didn't give them at least something to talk about. Yeah. I'm talking about the Lebanese politicians, the Lebanese government, by opening the air the airspace and the maritime space and the ground space for the Israelis freely to control
this
the
was
country
their terms,
and to go in and out as they understand that might cause something dangerous to the Israeli government or the Israeli army. That was not acceptable by anyone.
Exactly.
Even Samir Jarjah said these terms cannot be accepted because this is kind of a violation to the Lebanese, sovereignty.
Exactly. Well, like you're saying, Mr. Radwan, we also have Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri also yesterday reiterated that Resolution 1701 is not going to be changed or adapted. You want it as is. This is how it is. And also we have the Lebanese Prime Minister, Najib Mikati, who actually 2 days ago was being optimistic and saying that we can expect a ceasefire in the next coming hours or days, has even changed, saying that he is cautiously optimistic of some sort of ceasefire agreement or draft at least being discussed. He can definitely change his words there from being very optimistic in the next few hours to kind of and some sort of agreement. The question I have to ask you, Mr. Radwan, do you see any political solution to the situation in Lebanon?
No, not at all.
Yes.
I'm not seeing any solutions at all because the Israelis are planning, and that's what they have tried in 1982. They have tried to impose the 17th of May, agreement, which is allows them to control the whole country by that time, and that was resisted and refused disputed by the Lebanese resistance at that time. And at that time, the resistance was still in the beginning after the invasion and the occupation of the large part of the Lebanese soil.
Yes.
Now they are coming with a new plan to update the 17th of May in 1982 and to impose the 1701 plus.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1701 plus is just a modernized or updated copy of the 17th of May agreement in 1982. So that was not accepted at that time. Now the resistance, with all its power and support from the Iranian government and the Yemenis and the Iraqis and the will and the understanding and the more awareness of the plans of the enemies, that they will not stop at any agreement at all, because the 1701 was there, and they violated the 1701 35,000 times after the signing of this agreement.
Yes.
How many times did the Lebanese part violated this agreement? So The Israelis always gain what they can gain now and refuse it on later on in their favor, if they want to update those agreements in their favor. So they are trying just to take the area, and we are talking about Lebanon now, piece by piece, time after time. When they ever see that the time is right, they will try to cut more. So now they are saying openly that they want the whole Lebanon. It's not only the resistance. It's not only the Shiite part, and they want the whole Lebanon. What if they want to control the airport, which is lays on our left here?
Yes.
And the port of Beirut, which they hit in 2019, destroyed the airport or the port of Beirut. They want to control all the ground passages between Lebanon and Syria. So it's another occupation by the Israelis. We're saying about the Americans, because the Americans who are dealing with the Lebanese government on the ground now, How can we explain that a representative from the American Army, from the embassy, to go and tour in the airport of Beirut, yeah, to see, to make sure that no weapons is being received or delivered to Hezbollah at the airport. So this is, I cannot see more violating to our independence than this kind of humiliation imposed by the American embassy in Aukar.
Yes.
So if the Lebanese people really seeks freedom and real independence, this is the most violation that a country can accept, for another country to come and control the whole, let's say, airports or ports or passages at all. So the Lebanese must understand that Israel does not target only Shiit or only resistors. They their own plan to target the whole Lebanon.
Well, Mr. Radwan, just a few days ago, Hezbollah has a new Secretary General, Sheikh Naim Qasem. And I do have to ask you, I mean, we spoke a little bit about the situation on the ground in Lebanon. We spoke about politics. What's the significance of the timing of the announcement for his position?
It's a message. First of all, it's normal.
Yes.
Just after the, you know, the late martyr Hassan Nasrallah.
Yes.
This position cannot be left empty.
Yes.
It must be filled. And this is part of the regulations. So, and it shows that the party is capable of doing so by electing Sheikh Naim Qasem.
Yes.
For the position. Second of all, that Naim Qasem shows lately in his speeches, from the first one and the last one after he was appointed to the position, what I can understand from his face, from his body language, he was calm, he was confident, he was sure of the victory, and did not close the door in for the any kind of ceasefire according to 1701.
Exactly.
So now the resistance are, you know, regained total balance, total control, all positions were filled, and willing, and the most important in his speech was that we are willing to go and prepared for a very long war.
Yes.
So what are the Americans going to do now, and the Israelis achieving on the ground in the battlefield has failed, and it will fail again. They will gain nothing but more and more death and casualties to their and destructions to their army, because so far the resistance, the Lebanese resistance, did not targeted any civilians targets, did not attack any civilians directly, and they kept on shelling and destroying the Israeli brigades wherever they are and wherever they're stationed.
Well, I do want to move over a bit to the situation in Gaza. Just yesterday, we have at least 95 people killed in Gaza, of course, by the Israeli entity. And we have a new UN report that says that Israel has perpetrated a concerted policy to destroy Gaza's healthcare system that has included deliberate attacks on medical personnel and facilities, both of which are war crimes. In addition, the UK Prime Minister has declined to label Gaza crisis a genocide. The situation in Gaza, could you just give me your opinion? How long do you think it's going to remain, and what is Israel's goal in the end there?
First of all, I want to just send a message to the British government.
Yes.
How can we expect justifications or recognizing of our rights from the country who created Israel in the first place in 1948?
Yes.
So this is just, maybe that will make the story very short. Because what the British government needs more to accept the fact that what's going in Gaza is a genocide. So more 25,000 children is not enough for the British.
Yes.
Maybe they have a long history in suppressing and doing, you know, killing themselves in many parts, in Africa and in Australia, in America, in, you know. So they have a very long history in that. What do they have to do when they go and bombarding Yemen, for instance?
Right.
Why, if you want to protect Israel, why do you want to attack the Yemenis? Killing at one raid was about 50 civilians. Yemeni were killed in that raid. So I think that the British do have their own opinion and their own plans. I want to mention something very important. All these interests of those countries now coming to help the Israelis and trying to suppress all the resistance parties in the region, just trying to save the Sykes-Picot conventions, which took place in 1916, 1917.
Yes.
Because that in that convention, they partitioned this area into small countries. Now, these conventions is in very great danger because uniting what's so-called of the fields in the region, which was announced and declared by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, one way or another, unofficially, wiped off of these borders between Lebanon and Syria and Iraq.
Yes.
And Palestine. So the area has, you know, reunited itself without any official announcement of that. And the people now and the resistance movements now are fighting together, helping each other under the same control room.
Yes.
So they are very much afraid that all they have done in the last 100 years now is falling down. So, and the countries that they have created now in great danger. Do you believe that Jordan will remain as it is after this battle? I don't believe so. And the regimes that they have created and supported in the Gulf area. We are talking about the United Arab Emirates, which is joining the Israelis, fighting with the Israelis, supplying the needs for the Israelis. What do you need more? They becoming enemies as the Israelis because they are helping with all they can to protect the Israelis and urging the Israelis also at the same time. And this is the most disgusting act coming from an Arab Muslim to urging the Israelis to kill more and more of the Palestinians in Gaza in order to wipe Gaza out. So I don't expect anything to come from anyone except that the resistance in the area is the only tools and the only way, first to protect and then to gain back.
So again, so you see it very similar to the situation in Lebanon, that the so-called ceasefire talks happening in Doha are basically, they're useless.
Yeah, it's nothing but wasting of time.
That's
because
it.
For a year couldn't come up with the ceasefire.
Yes.
And not even providing any humanitarian aid to the Gaza to Gaza people.
Mm-hmm.
And even medications and destroying hospitals. You know, in Gaza most of the hospitals has been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And in Lebanon eight hospitals went out of work.
Service
totally, you know, closed. So what's and this is not a crime, war crime, in the understanding in the laws of those modern world, modern free world. So it's what can protect us from this aggression? Even Arabs or Israelis, Americans, Europeans, Germans, British, Americans, Australians, whatever. Who can justify and who can protect us? We're not expecting any justifications from them. But according to the law that you have imposed in 1948-49, in the UN counseling. So in that deal, after that you have put down an international law of what's making some kind of a law which is war law, international law, and saying what's the war crime and which is not. How come if you on this double scaling,
yes,
using the law or twisting the law in your favor whenever you want? So just name me one time that Israel obeyed or went by the law.
You can't.
Since 1948, no one, not even a single time. What did the international, let's say,
they
world?
They condemned. That's what they do.
Condemnations. Okay. Yes. What's the value of the condemnation?
They're simply words.
If you wanna condemn, stop the supplies.
Yes.
Stop supplying the Israelis. We are being killed by American rockets, by American planes, by American support, and urge from the those what's so-called Arabs also to kill more, kill and kill and kill. So don't we have a value as a human? We're not talking about politics here. We are talking about humanity. So we don't have a value here. We worth nothing in front of your eyes. Aren't we human beings being attacked by your weapons and killing, wiping off families? So how can you accept as a human to see a people, whole people, I mean, a country being wiped off,
yes,
civilians being wiped off as it's happening in Gaza? In Gaza now, the number have reached 200,000 people, which is about 10% of the civilians. 10% of the civilians is a very high number. Didn't happen in any other war.
Yes.
Took place in the, let's say, in the last 200 years. So the question is, where humanity is going? I'm not talking about politics.
Yes.
Where humanity is going? Because they brought up and they made their voices loud in Ukraine, because 600 children were killed in Ukraine in 3 years.
Well, you have to remember how the Western media quoted that when they were killed in Ukraine, the white blue-eyed, and it was reported live.
Exactly. So is it because that we have a dark skin, let's say, and we have a brown eyes, and we have a brown hair or black hair, so we don't have a value in your eyes, in your terms of determination, of the interpretations of the international law?
Yes.
So you must reconsider now the scaling that they are using against us and against, let's say, Ukraine or...
Very true. Those are very interesting facts, Mr. Ridwan. I do want to go a bit to Netanyahu and the situation in Gaza. There are sources saying that Trump has informed and told Netanyahu that he wants the Gaza war over by the time he enters office. Some analysts have said that Netanyahu is actually prolonging the war in Gaza until the American elections. What do you believe?
Well, as he enters office, in fact, means the next year,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yes.
It's not only...
He'll be elected, but he won't enter office until the beginning of next year.
You know, that will take time before, as he entered the office, and the ceremony of being elected as a president,
yes,
and forming his own government, choosing his own staff.
So around 2-3 months.
Around 2-3 months.
Yes.
So we are talking about December or January.
Mm-hmm.
That means clearly that he is giving Netanyahu another 3 months to go ahead with his war and to see what he can do in these 3 months. After that, because this empty circle must reach an end. If you cannot succeed in the battlefield, how can you succeed? What do you need more? Because the Americans are here. I mean, I'm talking about American soldiers.
Yes.
Emirates are there also,
mm-hmm,
fighting with them. On the ground, because that was and news, very little, nobody stopped at it, that 14 Abu Dhabi soldiers were killed.
Wow.
Somewhere. Where? How can 14 soldiers killed? Where? Where did they kill? You know, so it obviously in Gaza.
Yes.
And another news that the Emirates bought about 1,000 for 1,200 for 1 billion $200 million worth of ammunition from the Americans.
Uh-huh.
So, what's the need now for the Emirates to buy that large of quantity from the Americans as ammunition? We know that that's the Israeli army is just using lots of ammunition. It's always short of ammunition.
Yes.
On top of that, the Israeli army cannot do that number of the air raids in one day. So in order to, the number of planes or jet fighters that the Israeli army has does not allow him practically to do that much number on air raids against Lebanon and Gaza. So where's the rest of this number doing per day? Where's coming from? So obviously it's coming from the air carriers and some bases in the Gulf area.
Yeah.
So people must understand that the game is over now. The game is over for them. It's very clear, very obvious that we are fighting against the what's so called the evil countries, if I want to say so. Evil countries who are supporting the killing and massacring the children of Gaza, the children of Lebanon, destroying the country to bring us down on our knees. They have missed something that if you want to go in a plan, you must do your study well. Study well.
Yes.
Study well the people, study well the mentality, study well the doctrine of those people who are they willing to give up and go on their knees begging for their lives? So we are living a new Karbala, and we are proud to say that.
Yes.
Because we live by our pride or we die as a martyrs.
Exactly.
For our causes, defending our dignity, defending our independence, our sovereignty. So you didn't study well the society that you are fighting with. We are not Arabs, as you call between brackets, if you want to just define us as Arabs. We are not willing to sell our souls to the devil just for a few dollars of for a better living, better life. Better life for us is dying for a cause.
Yes.
Defending our own country. So they didn't, I believe, and I'm sure that they didn't calculate that well. So that's why now they are in the middle of, they are in a crisis, not us. They are in the middle of a problem that they don't know how to pull out themselves. So from this stinking mud that they went in, because we are going to fight, let's say, I don't want to be very optimistic, we are willing to fight till the last breath.
True.
So if they don't understand that, they must reconsider their understanding and work according to that.
Well, I do want to move over, we do have around less than 10 minutes of the show, to a country who is also defending their own rights, which is Iran, as we know. The Iranian officials yesterday actually vowed on a powerful response to the Israeli aggression on their country last week that targeted military sites, as we know, killed four of their soldiers. And also the commander of Iran's Revolution Guards, Major General Hossein Salami, also threatened Israel with a response that will surpass all expectations. The situation at the moment between Iran and Israel, I mean, some people were questioning whether they're going to respond limited as Israel did, but it doesn't seem so, does it?
Well, that's why they used all those dirty medias.
Yes.
to propaganda against Iran. They want Iran to go according to their wishes. Iran is a large country, is a very strong player in the region.
It's independent.
And independent. And it's on top, and the most important, is a revolutionary government.
Of course.
So it's not just any government was appointed or elected by the American embassy support or the British support. It's totally out of this control. So we can say that Iran is the only country who has created, the people of Iran created their own government, and they have chosen their choice. So in electing or developing their own system.
Yeah.
So that's why they are not very happy with what's going on, because they are used, especially the Europeans and the Americans, they are used to deal with Muppets.
True.
With their wishes, obey their orders, and doing what they are, you know. If I want to be very clear, they are used to deal with kind of slaves, you know. Just the slave will not discuss or will not regret any kind of orders coming from their masters. So can they master Iran? So far, what they have seen from the last attack, that the Iranians are capable on destroying Israel totally. Iran trying to avoid a major conflict in the region, because that will lead to a, you know, third world war. And
exactly.
This is consequences is very, very heavy and very big. And luckily, trying to avoid that kind of a, you know, regional war, but it's not willing to back up.
They're not.
They will not retreat. They will stand to their rights and to the existence of the and support of the revolution or the resistance parts or parties in the region. They are helping us, or helping the Yemeni, to protect their own dignity.
Exactly.
You know, what's going in the south, the people there, the fighters there, are not defending the Iranian land, are defending their own land. Iran is far geographically from the Israelis. So if this is what they don't understand, why Iran support or back up the resistance movements, and those where comes the media, the dirty media, which trying to say that the fighters in the south are defending Iran. I mean, Ait al-Shaab in Khiam is not an Iranian village, it's a Lebanese village.
Yes.
And the people who are fighting there, they are defending their home, their house, they're defending their land. It's not defending, it's far, if we want to call it that way. So you cannot, I know it's a poisoning media, using Al Arabiya or even MTV in Lebanon, and now we can say that Al Jadid is also have joined this poisoning media. I'm sorry to name them, but we should know.
Yes.
That's and the audience should know that those media are poisoning the minds of the people, are twisting the truth against the resistance.
So Iran, like you're saying, as certain media outlets have said, even U.S. and Western media specifically have said, that Israel has a right to defend itself. In this case, Iran has a right to defend itself, and it's simply carrying this out.
This is if you want to be fair in your scaling.
Yes.
So the Israelis have the rights. Don't we have the rights?
They're the only ones going according to international law.
Exactly. So according to your international law, which
yes.
is, you know, you created, you wrote it down, and you went by this law, we have the same rights. Aren't we allowed to defend ourselves? So the question remains to be answered.
Exactly. Well, we have around 30 seconds, and I do want you to briefly answer. There has been an updated partnership agreement between Iran and Russia emphasizing defense cooperation. Could we indeed see more action from Russia in the area?
Well, Russia and China also now is did the first step by warning the Israelis from attacking their brigades in the UN force in the south.
Yes.
So that's what stopped the Israeli from again, attacking the UN in the south. And also Russia knows by forming the BRICS countries, it's also another step to be freed from a single controller of the world and ruler.
Yes. Well, with that, I'm afraid our time has run out. I'd love to thank my guest, as always, Mr. Rizwan Razi, political analyst.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for watching. Until tomorrow, goodbye.